Welcome back to Balagan. One of the strongest engines of the protest against the judicial overhaul is Israel's economic engine, the high-tech industry. Its leaders joined forces against what they see as a threat to the state of Israel as a startup nation. With a thriving economy needs a strong democratic foundation. On the other hand, some parts of the high-tech industry actually help populist leaders around the world strengthening their control over messaging, tracking opposition, and bypassing the conservative media channels with no filters. One of the loudest voices in the high-tech scene, calling her friends to go out to the streets, is here with us today. Inbal Orpaz is a strategic consultant in the fields of innovation and startups, the founder of the Women in Tech Initiative to promote women in high-tech, and a visiting researcher at the Institute for National Security Studies, the INSS. Inbal, welcome to Balagan. It's good
to
have you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Kobi. Thank you for inviting me.
Share with us a little bit about the high-tech scene in Israel and what happened that those Tel Avivians that take their scooters around the city suddenly go out on the streets. What's happening?
If we had talked about 7 months ago, I would describe the tech ecosystem in Israel, you know, as a vivid ecosystem at the moment, maybe facing the global economic recession. But I live in Tel Aviv. It's the startup capital of Israel. Israel is a city that when you go in the streets here, when you go into a cafe in Tel Aviv and you listen to the tables around you, then you would probably hear people talking about their very new idea to start a startup. So this is what Tel Aviv and Israel would usually be. And if we're talking about numbers, just to get some, you know, sense of how important or vital the tech sector for the Israel economy is, then we're talking about more than half of the Israeli export comes from the tech sector. It's about almost 20%. It's around 18% of the GDP. Is the tech sector, and about 10% of the employees in Israel work in tech companies, and they pay about a quarter of the income tax in Israel. So you can imagine that the salaries in this sector, they are really high. It's almost three times the average salary in Israel. And those are also the funds that support the whole Israeli society. So this is in glimpse how important this sector is. And I will tell you a little bit about my experience with the tech sector. I was introduced to this sector as a journalist. I covered the Israeli tech sector for The Marker, which I would describe maybe as the Israeli Wall Street Journal. It's a financial newspaper. And that was my job, to wake up every morning and to see what is going on, who is investing in who is acquiring, you know, which company. And I was usually, I looked at the people who were, you know, the leaders of this industry, and most of them, they were focusing almost only on their business, and they didn't really care about the politics in Israel. You wouldn't hear them talking about, you know, sometimes maybe about the education, about things that made sense for them. But as a sector, this sector was never politically involved in Israel. What happened is that on early January this year, in 2023, the Justice Minister announced a judicial reform, or we can use other words to describe this process. And ever since
Yariv Levin. January 3rd.
So on late January, we had the first tech protest. People from the tech sector who participated and initiated protests starting to be loud against this reform. And ever since then, we had more and more people joining us, and the tech sector became one of the leaders and one of the loudest voices in this protest. Just last Friday, a founder of a California-based startup, and the founder, actually both of the founders, they live in Israel, and one of them was arrested by the police because he participated in a protest. So now in every protest, you meet people from the sector. Usually we wear shirts. It's a light blue. This is the color that we have all of our clothes and banners and everything. And it's a really important part of this protest.
It's funny to see, if you're looking at the protest, that you can literally some sort of uniforms to each one of the groups. You guys are light blue, brothers and sisters in arms are wearing khaki shirts.
The women protest is red.
Red. And then you have also the pink protest. It's very colorful and really interesting. But it's not something unique to the high-tech industry, because in the past, they were quite silent when this government or the other government will set policies. What was the game changer? I mean, when you're talking about the judicial overhaul, why should they care?
We talked a little about the perspective that those people used to have. Not until long ago, they were based or still based here in Israel, but their business is somewhere else, usually in the States, but it could be also in Europe, Asia, all other places. So for them, they felt like, okay, we live here, but our business is somewhere else. But then they started to realize that actually their business is also here in Israel, relies on the Israeli law system. And we know that the investors in this industry, in one hand, they want to invest in high risk, high gain companies and startups that maybe today it's very risky to invest in them, but in the long run, they're hoping to have
a profit.
Yeah, to gain a profit that the ROI would justify the investment. But once you change the rules of the game, then everything changes. If investors, they invest in companies and at some point the law changes, so they cannot take this risk and they would take their money somewhere else. And just to give you, again, the perspective with the numbers, it's also something unique about Israel. So we understood before that the tech sector is really important to Israel, and it's a unique situation. Like, we don't have, natural resources. We don't have industries. This is our business. We said it's about half of the export. But when you're looking about who funds this industry, actually, so more than 90% comes from the private sector, which is the highest rate among OECD countries. In other countries, you would see more, even in the States, the government supports R&D more than the Israeli government does. And when you're looking at those 90%, most of them, they come outside of Israel, which is also very unique. You don't have any other OECD country that is even similar to this situation. And now, if we take it all together, we understand that this sector is really important to the economy, not only for the people who work in this industry, but also, for everything around it. If I start a startup, I'm going to rent offices and I'm going to pay for the real estate and I'm going to hire lawyers and the accountants and, to have the whole ecosystem around me, to use producers to produce my event. So the whole economy is going to be impacted. And we understand that most of the money comes from the outside. And now we have to combine it with the overall global recession that started at the second half of 2022. And once the investors and the founders, when they understood the situation, we say in Hebrew, it became a very common phrase. So they entered the event, like they started, they understood that they have to take part and to stop the situation. Otherwise, this industry might be ruined.
We're talking about the industry. And as you said, it's really important for Israel's economy. It's literally, you can say, the backbone of Israel's economy at this point. But the high-tech industry also represents what I would say some factions of these coalition members would say, O Israel Arishona, the first Israel, the way they like to say now about Ashkenazi and Sephardic in Israel. Do you think that the high-tech industry has something to do with the growing gaps in Israel? Or I know that it may impact the way people see it.
So first of all, the tech industry in Israel has a diversity issue. So I'm dealing a lot with women in tech. So only one out of three employees in the tech sector in Israel is a woman. It's very similar to the situation in the States and other places. It's not unique to Israel. But for example, we know that in order to encourage a girl and then a woman to become part of the tech sector, then the best thing for her is when she's, you know, in high school or junior high school to take math exams and to learn the highest levels, you know, in STEM studies. And if we have this coalition, that's right now they're doing, it seems that they do everything they can to make women believe that they're not equal to men, to divide men and women, to avoid opportunities from women. So the situation might get even worse. We have people, you know, I've been watching lately The Handmaid's Tale.
Okay, series. Yeah.
It's really scary. In one of the first episodes of the first season, then there's like a flashback scene and you see two women, they go into a cafe and they want to pay for something and then their debit card doesn't work and they don't understand what is happening. And then they talk to each other and then they say, ah, right, yeah, they changed this law and now we cannot pay because only men can be responsible for women's money. And you watch it and you understand it, maybe. Very soon, or not very soon, but, you know, in the longer term, those laws might be possible in Israel. So as a woman, as a secular person, as someone who is part of the tech industry, I feel like all of my identities are under an attack during this government, since this government took control. So you're asking about the people who are part of this industry. It's not going to get any better. And another thing that we have to say is like, when we're looking at the demographics of Israel, we see that one of the fastest growing, by the way, not only in Israel, but around the globe.
In the world, yeah.
Populations in Israel, it's the ultra-Orthodox population. Right. And sometimes, you know, from people outside of Israel, it's hard to believe that they don't learn math and they don't learn English. So they don't have the most basic skills to not even succeed, but, you know, to be part of the tech sector and to participate in the workforce. And in this government, they just give more and more money to their institutions and they don't require them to teach their students the skills that they need. So, of course, yeah, for over a decade now, there are many efforts to have more ultra-Orthodox part of the tech sector. But this government is going to take us back. We won't see more people because they wouldn't have the skill set that they need.
We're talking about the coalition that is actually attacking the high-tech industry. And the person leading the coalition, one Benjamin Netanyahu, used to take much pride of the high-tech industry. Of course, his son took it to the extreme, saying that before his father came, we were not the startup nation, but we only grew oranges. But since his father made such a change, can in the industry, are there any conversations around the turn that happened to Benjamin Netanyahu, to the prime minister?
So, of course, like even until the last few years in Israel, they were very, I would say, maybe political. We had 5 or 6 rounds of elections. I can't even recall. So it was there. But I could, you know, sit, you know, at the client's office for lunch with their employees. And, you know, I like to listen to what people are talking about. So you wouldn't hear people talking so much about politics, even when we were in the middle of all of the elections. But now it's not that people are only talking about it. We have the place that this protest takes place most of the time when we're not in the street, it's in WhatsApp groups. So you have groups with hundreds and thousands of people, the leaders of the tech industry, the executives, the CEOs, the founders, investors, and they're talking about this all the time. Now, about Benjamin Netanyahu, he used to be like, we called him in Hebrew, Mr. Economy and Mr. Defense. Mm.
Yeah, he portrayed himself as Mr. Defense and Mr. Economy.
Yeah, so this is like how it was described. And it seems that lately, there's this contradiction because the tech sector is going down. We see the numbers, while in other places, the investments are already going up and the stock market is improving. For example, there's a gap of more than 20% in how much the stock market in Tel Aviv Stock Exchange and in Nasdaq, how much they grew from the beginning of this year. So we are paying.
I think Nasdaq went up 16% and the Tel Aviv stock market went like 2% or something like that.
So the gap is about there's a group of economists, leading economists working in Tel Aviv University, and they're following it day by day. So the latest numbers that I saw, they were about 23%.
Okay.
But it's not going anywhere. Like it's still. Other places are already moving, and here we see that the money is not coming back yet. But at the same time, Benjamin Netanyahu is still trying, you know, to portray himself and Israel, you know, as a startup nation. When you listen to the things that he says, so he's talking about all the time about artificial intelligence and cyber, and he's trying to do his very best to say, you know, everything is perfect. Don't listen, you know, to the credit score companies. They don't understand. They don't know what is happening here. The situation is very good. They're just the tech managers. They just say lies. Everything is very good. Hopefully, you know, he would be right, but I'm really worried. There are about 400,000 people working in the tech sector. There are many people who are working in this ecosystem, service providers working with
restaurants, coffee places,
real estate, everything. Real estate. You know, I'm listening to people all the time. So they say, I have a friend and she's looking at the moment to hire a new office. She says that the offices are empty because companies thought that they would grow. So they already rented floors in the buildings and now they just stand empty. And it is a problem, you know, and you also have the executives of the companies in the streets for weeks. Like now we have like a summer vacation. Our parliament, the Knesset, is in its time off between the summer and the winter. So things are slower, you know, in terms of the protests. Things are happening, but not as they used to be. But before, like we had weeks that almost every day we were outside.
I would say the whole protest movement in Israel is an amazing phenomenon. I don't remember seeing in history a civic struggle that goes for such a long time in such an intense way like in Israel. It looks like the people have really woken up, and I hope that it's not too late. They woke up just a little, you know, just before we got to the verge. But I want to go to another part that it involved with the high-tech sector. And that's actually social media and traditional media. All of the social media comes from high-tech companies. And we also, there was a big debate in Israel whether Facebook is helping Netanyahu, doesn't help Netanyahu. But there is a big room to speak about the space that social media is providing for populists to grow their audience and actually bypass answering hard questions. What's going on around it in Israel, from what you know?
So first of all, I don't think it's very different from what is going on in the States and in other places. It's easy to blame the social media platforms for, you know, the bad things, but at the same time, they also enable us to do great things. As I told you, like we manage most of the protests, you know, from WhatsApp groups. So it's also, you know, Meta, and they help us. And at the same time, we use them and we fight them, for example, because they close Facebook accounts and they enable the evil people to use them. So it is a complicated situation. And I've been researching this arena for 4 years now. And actually, when we started to research this topic at the INSS, the Institute for National Security Studies, so the main event or the main thing that happened was, you know, everything that happened with Trump in the US and to understand everything around this area. So, of course, a lot had been learned from what happened in the US. It's complicated because, first of all, the traditional media is in one of the worst crises, you know, that could happen. And in Israel, the situation is even more complicated. I used to work for an Israeli newspaper, so I felt this pressure while I was a journalist. We had two big rounds of layoffs. About one, I think one third of journalists, they were fired while I was there. So, and it's happening even nowadays. Like you open the news and every day you hear about journalists being laid off from the publishers. So the situation is bad. Most of the publishers are weak. You barely have investigative journalism in Israel. You see the political pressures. You have channels, for example, Channel 14, that is, you know, it's supposed to be news outlets.
Channel 14. The BB supporters are calling Channel 12 Al Jazeera, but one may think that actually Channel 14 is some sort of Al Jazeera.
For sure, it's not journalism, it's propaganda.
Yeah.
They lie about people, they manipulate, it's horrible, they spread lies. So you have problems in this arena, but I think it's, then you have the social media echoing and amplifying what is happening in the traditional media. And you also have the journalists working for, and it, in some cases, it's even hard to call them journalists because, you know, they're not following really the ethics expected from a journalist. But then they use their social media accounts, mostly their Twitter accounts, to share their opinions, to spread all the lies and all the bad things that they say. So actually, they support each other. And, you know, we have the usual
problem. They echo each other. They echo the same message.
And we have, you know, the usual problems like everywhere, the echo chambers, like, you know, all the problems related to social media and the weaknesses of the journalism. At the same time, we also have, you know, foreign influence in the social media. This is another topic that I researched. So you also have foreign players, you know, trying to make the troubles, you know, they identify, you know, a gap or something that, you know, creates a tension within the Israeli society. And they're trying, you know, to deepen it and to make it even worse. So you have everything happens at the same time, and it's really hard. It's really like you see, it's a toxic environment.
I just remembered, you know, we're using WhatsApp because we're Israelis, but most Americans actually don't know what WhatsApp is. So WhatsApp, I think it's the most used, maybe actually WeChat, the Chinese app is bigger, but WhatsApp is a huge messaging platform that used worldwide, and its advantage over, for example, iMessage in iPhones is that you can connect with everybody who has WhatsApp, no matter what their phone is, whether if it's an Apple, or, you know, an iPhone or an Android. And that was their greatest advantage.
And no matter where they live, and it's part of a Meta Group.
Yeah, now it's a part of Meta Group.
Yeah, for a few years now. It was acquired by Facebook back at the time. So all the time with this, you know, also as a protest movement, you know, with the big platforms, because we want them to block, for example, this afternoon, Inon Magal, which is one of the anchors of Channel 14, published a list of phone numbers of admins of a WhatsApp group of one of the groups in the protest. And say, okay, now this is our target. It doesn't like that because now everywhere the politicians that are leading the coalition, everywhere they go, then the protest is following, and the protesters actually are following them and coming, you know, to protest with the flags to make some noise wherever they go. So he said, okay, those are the people responsible for this in the north region, and now we have, you know, to attack them. So, for example, the report that numbers are, you know, are doing something abusive, for example, and then WhatsApp shuts or blocks those numbers, and they use it a lot. And then people get stuck out of, you know, of their phones. So it's part, you know, of, it's not a war, but actually it is a bit like
it is. It is some sort of a war. It's not, you know, with guns. It's different tools.
Different tools, different parties, but... Yeah, but it's one of the main arenas, you know, to influence people and maybe to shape the public opinion about what is going on. So it's also more operational, you know, to help people connect, to use it, you know, as a media outlet, but it's also like really a place
that can help.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope that, you know, that social media eventually in the long run will help the humankind for good. I mean, I remember when they just started, you know, working with Facebook and before that, the internet and Google and everything said, oh, it will help to promote and strengthen democracy. And from what we see so far, it actually helps to, I would say, drive everybody crazy with populist leader who learned how to take advantage of these platforms.
So, yeah, it's very true. Like in the Arab Spring, we said, okay, those are, you know, the ambassador of the liberal values. Those are the enablers of the Arab Spring. It was a huge thing, you know, and it was only about 10 years ago. It was not that long ago. But now we understand that it also has, you know, its problems. But on the other hand, we wouldn't have this talk if we didn't have the social media platforms, because we are talking about this protest, but actually the infrastructure was already established in the 2020 and 2021 when we had the previous round of protests, and there were local groups, and you use those groups to move people from one place to another and to let them know that things are happening and to call them, you know. Actually, for now, for us now, the important thing is to be outside in the street, wherever we have to be. And you need a mean or, you know, a tool to let people know where to be and when to be and what to do. So this is how you do the whole communication with them. So it's the main mean of communication. It's a very important channel. For example, once a few months ago, I sent something in one of the groups, and some people, what we call the Hills Boys. It's the
Hilltop Boys, the guys from the settlers.
Yeah, the
from the small settlements.
And then in 1 hour, I got, you know, a call and message one after the other. They were talking, you know, just, you know, cursing me. And they're like, they're really using it also to attack the people and to avoid them, you know, from doing their thing. So it's for the good and for the bad and everything at the same time. And we're trying to find a way, you know, to work with the platforms. It's really hard. It's not that you can just call and say, hi, Mark, can you please help us with a problem, I don't know, in one of your platforms. It doesn't work this way. Like, we have to use very, you know, channels that we have and to use the lawyers and, you know, to find ways to get to them. And it's really hard. And sometimes it's almost even impossible. For example, if you're using Telegram,
which is encrypted.
So it is complicated, but also helpful.
Inbal, I got to tell you, I mean, we have a lot more we can talk about, and we'll find the time for, you know, to extend the conversation about other channels on which the protests are going to, you know, where we're going to see the Israeli protests.
Maybe we can say in one sentence, at the moment we're focusing on the municipal elections. At the end of October, we're going to vote for, in every city and every place, we're going to vote for the city council and for the mayors.
For the mayors.
At the moment, this is the main focus of the protest. So people are all around Israel and are focusing on this. And I can also tell you between us, that I'm also going to run for the City Council of Tel Aviv. So this is one of mine, also my personal focus at the moment.
Remember where you hear this scoop first. Yeah. Here on Balagan. So Inbal, thank you very much. I wish you a lot of success with the municipal campaign. I actually think that it's really important that the secular people, the majority of the people of Israel, who are so silent politically, suddenly woke up and realized that they need to be players on the field instead of spectators, always swearing at the politicians. So you're doing a really courageous step here. So on a personal level, good luck.
Thank you.
And in a general, you know, and even bigger than, thank you very much for enlightening us today. We'll be in touch, and I would love to hear you again here in Balagan.
Thank you very much. And I will finish with the sentence from our protest. We say, Gush Echad Yachad Nenatzeach. Together, united, we are going to win. And of
course, God, it sounds socialist. We don't, no, I'm joking.
Okay, so let's just finish with the
I'm joking.
But,
yeah.
So this is hard.
We say it in Israel also. We taught the Americans how to say it.
Great. So let's finish with democratia.
Yeah, definitely. But I love Gush Echad Beyachad Nenatzeach because it's true.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you very much,
Kobi.
Bye.
If you found this episode enlightening or thought-provoking, be sure to subscribe to Balagan on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. And hey, if you're feeling extra generous, leave me a review. Your feedback means the world to me and helps others to discover the show. Of course, sharing the episode link with others will also be greatly appreciated. Remember, the conversation doesn't have to stop here. Join me on Balagan's Facebook group to continue discussing today's episode and connect with fellow listeners. I would love to hear your thoughts, questions, and suggestions for future topics. You are more than welcome to check my website, www.balaganil.com, for additional resources. I'm committed to connecting you with Israel and providing you with proper context. Until the next time, remember that knowledge is power. Keep learning, keep growing, and continue engaging with Israel. I can't wait to catch you in the next episode of Balagan.